Okay. There is quite a lot of synergy for us today, because coming from the fourth Aliyah, the Parshas Nitzavim, and we actually have the ability to focus just on Parshas Nitzavim here, which is itself a special opportunity, there is really a phenomenal alignment between the Parsha and the time of year. We know that happens very often, but it's very, very striking today, because it gives us the opportunity to talk about tshuva just days before Rosh Hashanah, well within our slichos zone, and to ponder the role of some of those ideas as we anticipate the new year and Yisrael Shemei Tshuva. And together with that, there's an additional level of synergy for us, because one of the main themes we'll see within a minute or two is the question of tshuva as a mitzvah and how exactly that concept plays out. And of course, we spoke about gittin and the nature of get as a mitzvah, so there were many aspects to figure out, and in a sense, there's a strong parallelism between how get could be perceived, perhaps, and maybe how tshuva could be perceived, although we'll see, we will ultimately take it in another direction. So just to begin with, first we'll maybe look at the psukim as a set. It's a very short aliyah, but it's very, very packed with these major concepts. So we'll read the first few psukim together. So the aliyah begins, V'hoya ki avo alecha kol dvarim ha'ela, habracha b'haklala asher nasati lefanecha. So all of what was discussed in previous parsha and beginning here, kisavo leading into here. So you're going to have all of these ups and downs. Vashivosa elvavecha b'chol hagayim hasher hadichacha Hashem elokecha shama v'shavta ad Hashem elokecha v'shamata b'kolo k'chol asher anochi mitzavcha hayom ata uvanecha b'chol avavcha u'b'chol nafshecha v'shav Hashem elokecha es shivusucha v'richamecha v'shav v'kibetzcha mikol ha'amim asher hafitzcha Hashem elokecha shama v'yani dachacha b'kseh ha'shamayim v'sham mikabetzcha Hashem elokecha u'misham mikochecha. So let's pause there for a second. So what do we have going on in these psukim? So a number of references to shav, to tshuva, to return. So already this is catching our attention and focusing us on what? So on the one hand, there is a theme here of physical return. It's clearly a part of it. And the Gemara Maseches Megillah on Daf Chav Tes focuses on the language of Shav Hashem to tell us that we are so fortunate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is traveling with us, so to speak, when we are in exile and on our way back. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is coming with us, he's returning with us. So that is one of the ideas here. But it seems also quite clear, with all the references to heart and soul, that we're also talking about the act of spiritual return. Now we're talking about tshuva in the sense that is on our minds so much these days. And the Ramban, indeed, if you had a chance to see, and I said that in at some point, you should take a look at the Ramban, that the Ramban understands that this is the source, v'shavta ad Hashem elokecha, this is telling us, the v'shavta ad Hashem elokecha, this is telling us the mitzvah of tshuva, that there's an obligation, that there's an imperative to return. This is also how the Smak understands it, and indeed one comes away from this aliyah very much with that impression that there is a mitzvah being related here, that we should go back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the main question that occupies the mind of a number of commentators, both because of the psukim, but really also because of everything, because of where we're at right now, is what about the language of the Rambam? That the Rambam in Mishneh Torah, so he does not seem to record a mitzvah of tshuva. And he's going to emphasize the hedging language there, because we'll see that there's really a lot more to say about it. But on the surface, it doesn't sound like he talks about a mitzvah of tshuva, because both in Sefer HaMitzvahs, the mitzvahs that say Ayin Gimel, and also, if you had a chance to look at the way it's presented in Mishneh Torah, in the beginning of Hilchos Tshuva. So it sounds like the Rambam is talking about one act specifically as a mitzvah that's associated with this whole direction. And what is that? Vidui. And the language is that when one does tshuva, so then there is a directive that he should engage in vidui, that he should confess, for lack of a better translation. It definitely is a better translation, but we'll use that for now, that he should express what he did wrong. So this has prompted a number of commentaries to wonder, so is it the case that the Rambam does not record a mitzvah of shuva, and that it's only when one is ready to do shuva, so then there's a process, and that is vidui. But to do tshuva itself, according to the Rambam, is it possible to say that it's not a mitzvah? It seems very difficult to say, and again, the question is on two levels. One is that how do you interpret these psukim, which seem like it's telling us there is a mitzvah of tshuva. But even if we could find another interpretation for these psukim, and we could, the question would be even more glaring just theologically and overall. So you're going to tell me that we have all of this focus going on right now with all of the slichos and everything in Elul and the Aseres Yemei Tshuva coming up in Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and all of that is only the most intense version of what happens all year, and yet you're going to say tshuva is not a mitzvah? Seems very difficult to say, although there were those who said it from the Rambam and the Menchas Chinuch and the Avodas Melech, which is a sefer written by Rav Soloveitchik's uncle, Nachum Kalkowski. So they understood the Rambam to indeed be saying that apparently tshuva itself is not a mitzvah. But it's a very, very difficult position to take. And there are those who suggest, and here is again where some comparison to our discussion regarding get comes into play, that there's some who suggest, there's a whole discussion about this in the Sefer Paris Yosef HaChadash on our Parsha, also in the Sefer Ole Yaakov, that's a contemporary Sefer, that's an essay in Parshas Nitzavim where he quotes a number of ideas along this line also, that maybe the problem is that here you have a mitzvah that only comes about because of an Avera, only comes about because of bad things. So therefore, the Rambam is not going to identify that as the mitzvah. And that, we'll see, is already a difficult approach, but it gets a little bit more difficult because in these Sfarim, they quote from various other Sfarim, Pshatim, that I think are very, very hard to say, although there's aspects of them that we can hold on to, but just to first to relate what they are. So there are those who understand that apparently there's this mitzvah here of tshuva, which would only come into play if one does an avera, and therefore maybe, sounds quite extreme, I think it is, that maybe there's an inyan to davka do an avera so that you can fulfill this mitzvah of tshuva. So they quote the name of the Chiddush Harim, they also quote the name of the Chanukah Satorah, which is an interesting sefer in general, that the idea of what Chazal say, that Ha'omer Echtev Ashuv, Ein Yom HaKippurim Mechaber. If somebody says, oh, I'm going to sin and I'll do tshuva, I'll sin and I'll do tshuva, so then Yom Kippur is not Mechaber. Just to explain the point. So they focus on the fact that it repeats the phrase, Echtev Ashuv, twice. So the question is, second, so why repeat it? Why don't we just say it? If somebody says, I plan on sinning, and I plan on doing tshuva afterwards, so that's trying to game the system, and that shouldn't work. But why do you have to say it twice? Echtev Ashuv, Echtev Ashuv. So they suggest that if it was just once, Echtev Ashuv, so that could be legitimate, because that might be you're trying specifically to catch the mitzvah of tshuva, so Nebuch, what can you do? You're too perfect to be able to do tshuva, so you'll Hashem Shemayim, Avera L'shma, so you'll do an Avera so that you'll have the opportunity to do tshuva. So, okay, once. Yeah, it's a tzaddik, and people are mitzvah nefesh in incredible ways. So, okay, so once that can make sense, because you need to do it to do the mitzvah of tshuva. But to do it twice, that's where you get into the problem. Again, it's a very difficult pshat. I could hear a part of it. I could hear that there is a significance to the repetition, saying that it's not necessarily about somebody who does this once, but it's about an attitude, somebody who's living their life, going on and saying, it's okay, I can just do whatever I want. because tshuva will always be there for me, it's always going to be available, in the spirit of what Chazal say elsewhere, that somebody who says that Kadosh Baruch Hu is a Vasran is in big trouble, meaning someone says God, he's okay with everything, he'll always be fine with it, so I'll always have tshuva as a possibility. I could hear that that's the message of the repetition, that it's not just a one-time thing, but it's an attitude overall. But the other part of it is very difficult to say that it's okay once, because there is a value, because you want to do tshuva, it seems very, very hard to see it that way. Like Eric was up first, and Jonathan?
So, are we trying to say that we're trying to like kind of almost diminish the mitzvah of tshuva because it's reactionary, or like you have around them, like, may not list it, or like you have to do like, what about Birkat HaMazon? Birkat HaMazon is a mitzvah, and like it's only happens to eat bread. Yeah, it's the likely thing is that you're going to eat bread. Same thing with tshuva, by the way, everyone. You know, I think it's like there's a Mishnah, and like, I was saying it's like four people never sin.
Right.
Why are we? Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. No. So we'll come to that. Yeah. I see it's different than benching, because here they're focusing specifically on the fact that it comes from an aveira, not just
like stealing.
So there's stealing.
The point is just that you can still consider a mitzvah even though it's reactionary and is only necessary if you do a thing, regardless of if things likely or not.
Correct. Right. So there's a lot to quibble with if it's a part of it. But there's still a difference between the benching issue, because here we're talking about specifically that it has to do with an Avera. But we'll say more about that along the lines I think you'll relate to a little bit more. But this is an idea that you do find in some of these farim, that there is this notion specifically to do the Avera so that you can do tshuva. And so, for example, they say that maybe that's pshat in the Gemara in Brachos, where the Gemara says that Ibroa tamachacham sh'avar Avera b'layla. If you see a Talmud Chacham who does an Aveira the night before, Al Tahara Acher of Bayom, the next day you shouldn't have negative thoughts about him. Shama Hirher B'Tshuva, because you can assume maybe he thought thoughts of Tshuva. And then the Gemara says, Shama Tshuva, Ella Vadaya Tshuva. No, he definitely did Tshuva. So what's Pshat in that Gemara? So the cynical Pshat is they say, Shema asa tshuva, elavadai asa tshuva, the Talmud Chacham, he definitely wrote a tshuva saying it was mutter. You shouldn't think negatively about him. But the opposite direction, the non-cynical but extreme in the other way of pshat, is they want to say, no, the reason the Talmud Chacham did the Avera in the first place was because he wanted to do tshuva. Nebuch, he was too perfect, so he had to find an Aveira to do so that he could do the mitzvah of tshuva, and that's how we're supposed to interpret it. So therefore, we should understand that not just that he did tshuva, so he fixed the sin, but even the original sin was for that purpose. Even that was just because he was looking for the opportunity to do tshuva. Presumably, pshat is really in the middle of those two pshatim, and that it means that the Talmud Chacham is able to sin like the rest of us, but because of his commitment and his values, so we can assume that he does tshuva also, and that that should be a part of how we assess it. So this whole idea is certainly very, very difficult on a lot of levels. Ali?
Just regarding when you said that the Ram didn't include it, because again, it's brought about by negative mitzvah, so I was just thinking about like the Mesota. Mm-hmm. That's actually like a positive mitzvah that says... So I'm just wondering why that is, because like it's brought about by like the woman suspected, like
right. So a lot of things. So there also, it's interesting. The whole thesis, as we see, is going to be problematic for a lot of levels, and you probably have a lot of questions. In that case, there it is specifically something others are doing to fix the situation, and also it, maybe she's innocent, and it's to bring shalom between the husband and wife, as Chazal portray it. But there's a lot of directions you could ask the question from. And certainly also, I think here we're only getting to half the questions, because so this whole attitude that maybe Yudavka should do an Avera so he could do the mitzvah of tshuva, so in some svarim they don't like that, as you can understand. But I think the objection also doesn't go far enough. So, for example, but also to get the synergy in this reference, so in the Ole Yaakov, it brings many who question this whole approach, and he says, you don't have to say that Echteva Oshav was a good thing once, if you say it only once because you want to do the Avera, so you can do Tshuva, or that's Pshat, and the Talmud Chacham, Shavar, Avera, Balayla. There's no need for all these things, because Tshuva doesn't have to be a mitzvah that is a standard obligation in the sense of everything else. And he quotes from Chaim Vital, who talks about the fact that there are different kinds of mitzvahs, there's Tayyag mitzvahs, and the notion that all of us are supposed to perform all 613 mitzvahs and go out of our way to find the opportunity, it's not the case. And what example does he give most prominently? This is Gittin. So if we say Gittin is considered a mitzvah, Gerushin is considered a mitzvah, so we wouldn't mean Chas v'Shalom, we're recommending that everybody pursue this. And he quotes some of the sources that we spoke about, in the language of the Gemara in the very end of the Masechta. So it's clear that something can be counted as a mitzvah, but it doesn't mean that we're encouraging everybody to do it. So you won't have to look for averus to do, just so you can do the mitzvah of tshuva. However, I would say that, yes, all of that granted, and certainly when it comes to Gittin, that would be a correct way to put it. But as far as tshuva, I'm not so sure that that's really the correct way to put it. Because, first of all, as Eric was alluding to, you're going to have to look very far and wide to find somebody who doesn't already have a need to do tshuva. And I would wonder if you'd ever find anybody that even those that the Gemara says sinned, but the Gemara says never sinned, but still tshuva is really a inyan for all of us, because tshuva is about moving towards perfection. And even if we don't technically commit any averus, that would be quite an accomplishment. But it still wouldn't mean that there isn't a constant avoda left to be done, or else we wouldn't still be alive if we didn't have more avoda to do. So to say that there's anyone who the mitzvah of tshuva doesn't apply to is a huge stretch. And for example, also, you'll notice if you look at things throughout Chumash, so we talk about Moshe Rabbeinu doing an avera, memoriva, and things like that. So it's not that we could look at one of the list of the Tariq mitzvahs and see which avera he did. So we don't necessarily mean that there's a classification that you are technically in violation of. We mean that anybody who's not living up to their potential fully is in need of tshuva, is in need of, and we sometimes call that even an avera, even if it's not something that is listed as one of the averis that you are commanded not to do and that you have to fix. So the notion that there's anybody who's not subject to tshuva is very hard to say. And even if you are literally the most developed person in the world, literally a Moshe Rabbeinu, there's still room to grow. There's still going to be tshuva. Now, we cite here the pasuk of Ein Tzadik Ba'aretz Asher Yaseh Tov Li'echta. But that has also been involved in this previous pshat. It's going to say, that's pshat. Oh, ain't tzaddik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov li'echta, that the tzaddik has to sin because he's looking to the mitzvah of tshuva, so that's why you can't have a tzaddik who's not going to sin because he got to do the mitzvah of tshuva. But to take it again more literally, that it's just not the reality that God created any people who have nothing to fix. We all have something to fix. And that is the case. So all of us have a mitzvah of tshuva. And this is especially true according to the Rambam. We're all trying to address the Rambam and his language. That's what started this whole point. Without the Rambam, no one would have even brought up the issue. And the Rambam, to say that he doesn't believe that there's a mitzvah of tshuva is very difficult. First of all, he's the one who wrote Hilchos Tshuva. And in the other codes, we don't have a Hilchos Tshuva. So in the Shulchan Aruch, you don't have Hilchos Tshuva. You have a lot of the halachas of this season that are incorporated in Hilchos Yom Kippurim. So, for example, the crucial halachos of asking Mechila and Tshuva Ben Adam L'Chavero and things like that, and other aspects of what we do this time of year, so that you can find in Aruch Hayim and Hilchos Yom Kippurim. But you don't have Hilchos Tshuva laid out like that in the other codes. So it's specifically the Rambam who, in his halachic code, he has a Hilchos Tshuva of 10 prakim. So to say that he doesn't have a mitzvah of tshuva is hard to believe, but also because he has another chiddush, which is unique to him, that the Rambam maintains that tshuva has to be done not only for averus, similar to what we were just saying before, that it's not only correlated to actual transgressions on the list of 613 mitzvos, but says the Rambam, you have to do tshuva even for mitos rows. So everyone is certainly subject to the mitzvah of tshuva on that level. So to tell me that the Rambam, who says you have to do tshuva for even midos, is going to believe as anybody who doesn't have the opportunity to do tshuva, it's a stretch. That's very hard to see, or to see that it's only something that's going to be relevant to people who have sinned in a specific way. It's a very difficult perspective. Did you get that question?
Does that mean that necessarily he thinks there's a mitzvah of tshuva? Or
is this concept of tshuva? But to have such a body of halacha devoted to it and saying that one is obligated to do tshuva for midos rows sounds very clear that he does have a obligation of tshuva. He sees it as an imperative. And just to focus so much on this language of vidui as the emphasis in the beginning and as what he uses as the vehicle for tshuva, it seems like that's hard to put all of that on that table. So there are other interpretations also as far as the language of the Rambam, and I think these are certainly more compelling. So, for example, the Mavit in the Kiryas Sefer, so he writes that tshuva and vidui are all one mitzvah, that this is all counted together, and that's the way the Rambam is expressing tshuva, and that's something that we'll come back to and say a little bit more about. There's also a very nice essay about this, Viruchim Olshan, one of the Rosh Yeshiva in Lakewood, has a beautiful svarim, which are at the moment mostly about the Moadim, and has very, very nice things to say about all the Yom Tovim now, has on the, throughout the year. So in his volume on Yom Kippur, so he explains that the idea of the other components of tshuva are all connected to vidui. So, for example, he says that vidui includes azivas achet, that you have to commit to leaving the avera when you do the vidui, otherwise the vidui is just empty words. Otherwise, it's going to be, as they say, tovo v'sharet biado, which is an important discussion to have also, about what exactly is the role of abandoning the avera. But also, he quotes from Rav Yitzchak Petterberger, Rav Yitzchak Blazer, who was one of the great, perhaps the greatest, certainly among the top three students of Rabbi Saul Salanter. Rosh Yeshiva Karen Biavni used to refer to him as the Lamdan Shal Musar. He was a great Talmud of Israel in Lamdas and in Musar. He wrote the Sefer of Shalos and Chuvas, a very important Sefer called Chuvas Pri Yitzchak, and he also wrote an important Sefer of Musar called the Kofle Or. So Rabbi Saul understood that it's true that the process of tshuva is a process that we associate with three parts. It has to be charata, and vidui, and aziva sachet. And it could be many more also, different rishon. So the aziva sachet is presumably together with Kabbalah ha'asir. You're leaving this in, you're saying you're not going to do it again. Now the truth is, if you look at Rabbeinu Yonah, look at others far, and they break it down into more parts. But it's most commonly understood as a three-part process. So you have charata, and you do vidui, and Kabbalah la'asid. So Ritzel explained that it's only vidui that comes about only because the mitzvah of tshuva. Because, first of all, charata is how the whole thing gets started. If you didn't regret what you did, so then presumably this whole process wouldn't have a place. So charata is kind of automatic. And aziva sachet, that you're not going to do the avera again. So that's not just there because of tshuva, that's there because of the original halacha. So if somebody is mechal Shabbos, so he's not allowed to be mechal Shabbos after that, so that's already the din. So he has to stop being mechal Shabbos, but he has to stop being mechal Shabbos anyway. So that practice is not going to come from the mitzvah of tshuva. So, therefore, out of the aspects, the components of tshuva, the only part that is obligatory because the mitzvah of tshuva is vidui. So he says the Rambam focuses on that because when we say there's a commandment to do tshuva, so it boils down to three things, but those two of those three things are necessary anyway without this mitzvah. So, therefore, the mitzvah is telling you to do one of these three things. And that's why the language of the Rambam is that way, which was an interesting shot. Eric?
Is that a, doesn't the Rambam also like, say that invocation like isn't a halakha? That's kind of like a it's kind of just like a prerequisite.
Yeah, that's a whole discussion.
Is that kind of like in that same like line of thinking where these are things you need to do be doing in order to do tshuva, in order to do mitzvah and halakha and stuff. So
maybe, but here also it's just that if we're saying that there's a imperative that comes from tshuva. So that imperative is only going to add one thing, because out of the three parts, the other two are there for other reasons. So the mitzvah boils down to telling you to do this one thing. There is also a mahalach that Rav Soloveitchik wrote in his shirim, gave over in his shirim, and that goes as follows, that essentially when it comes to mitzvos. So mitzvos usually involve actions, and when you perform that action, So then the mitzvah is fulfilled. So you have what we call a ma'isa mitzvah, the action that you do. And that generally is a kima mitzvah. That generally fulfills the mitzvah. So we have 613 mitzvahs. So for most of them, the vast, vast majority, probably at least 98% of them, so the mitzvah and the kiyum come together. You perform the action, the ma'isa and the kiyum come together, you perform the action, and that is the fulfillment of the mitzvah. But there are a handful of mitzvos where it's not exactly that way, and there is an action to be done, and the kiyum is somewhere else. The kiyum happens as a result of that. And it happens to be that this time of year, they're kind of clustered around Rosh Hashanah and Yom Tov. So a lot of them we have an opportunity to point to now, so we'll just take a minute to ponder some of them because they happen to give us an opportunity to talk a little bit about Rosh Hashanah before Rosh Hashanah comes. So a few good examples might be actually the mitzvah of shofar. There's a whole discussion about whether the mitzvah of shofar is tekiah or shmiah. And that was a debate that goes into the question of what the bracha should be. It was a machlokus from the Rishonim. We focus on Shmia, but it's a big discussion why, and how does Tekiah fit in then, especially since we know that we don't just assign the Tekiah to anyone. The Tekiah has to be somebody who is chayiv in the mitzvah. So to say that the Tekiah is not the mitzvah is difficult, it would seem. So how do we resolve that? So one approach that Rav Soloveitchik had put forward in that context, Rav Shechter discusses the state of Eretz HaTzvi. I saw a sign on the elevator. There's a new printing of Eretz HaTzvi. So you can see it there. That he thinks the pshata when it comes to shofar is that the ma'isa ha-mitzvah is the tekiah shofar. But the kiyum ha-mitzvah, the real fulfillment of the mitzvah, comes from hearing. But the hearing is essentially a passive act. So the ma'isa of the mitzvah is the tekiah shofar. This also plays out when it comes to Yontif. So Yontif, we know we have a mitzvah of Simcha, and practically we say that means having good meals, having meat and wine, things like that. That's the mitzvah of Simchas Yontif. But there also, Soloveitchik explained, that really the mitzvah is not about the eating meat and the drinking wine, that the mitzvah is the Simcha. So Kiyum Shebalev. But there, again, it's emotional. It's not something that you can just turn on and off. So we need to have some kind of action. So even though the language of the Torah there is v'samachta b'chagecha, it sounds like it's talking about an emotion. But since emotions are not under our direct control, so then we would assume that it involves an action to do, and that action is the action of time v'vesa mikdash the karbanos, but simpazman is that, to eat meat, drink wine, things like that, actions that are likely to trigger the emotion of Simcha. Did you?
So the mitzvah, I mean, according to the Vajas, the Rambam, it seems like you said that like, the mitzvah of Simcha and Yantiv is sort of like a subjective.
Well, that's the problem, right?
If you're a vegetarian,
it's a good question. We won't get into it now, but it is a good question. The question of is, are there other avenues?
Rambam says that. Wearing his clothes, jewelry, fun stuff for the kids.
That's all from the Gemara. Like, these are all things that we do as vehicles for getting to the emotion of Simcha. And just while we'll take this opportunity to focus on Rosh Hashanah for a minute, that it could also suggest that there's a twist on this when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, because Rosh Hashanah is a machlokas, whether there is a mitzvah of Simcha or not, and how exactly that affects some halachos, such as most prominently the question of meals on Rosh Hashanah. Is there an obligation to have sudos on Rosh Hashanah or not? So this was, the quickest answer to every question. So is there a mitzvah to eat on Rosh Hashanah?
Machlokas.
But how many?
It involves food.
How many opinions are there?
Six,
right? So six opinions. Very good. We shall say today. Paying attention, even better. Six shitas, right? So one of the shitas is that it's actually mutter or maybe even advisable to fast on Rosh Hashanah. So how would we understand that? So I think along the lines of what you did just saying is that the simcha on Rosh Hashanah is maybe a little bit more subjective. And that when it comes to Yontif, the regalim, Sukkot, and Pesach, and Shavuot, so then there's a different kind of more objective type of simcha, which may be indicated by the language of sason, the simcha, is the theme for those days, which require us to really celebrate in the moment. So fasting is not consistent or compatible with that attitude. So for sure you have to have meals on those days. When it comes to Rosh Hashanah, so the goal is, yes, there is simcha, but the nature of the simcha is different. It's not that we're celebrating like we do on the Regalim. That the simcha of Rosh Hashanah and also Yom Kippur is that we should have a sense of optimism towards the process. That if we go through this process of the Aser Sumei Tshuva, that ultimately it will bring about a good result for us. So it is kind of an optimistic contentment and simcha in the situation rather than a rejoicing in the moment. So what is the vehicle for that? So the vehicle for that could also be good meals. But theoretically, if somebody is very nervous about his state of his neshama, and he feels that only having a fast right now is going to help him do tshuva in a way that will further guarantee a good result, so then maybe for such an individual, maybe fasting is going to be the vehicle towards that mindset. So it does reflect this whole idea that the kiyum is belayv, and in order to get to that kiyum, so we're assuming this is the vehicle, but maybe there could be other approaches to that as well. So
that's just Rosh Hashanah.
For Rosh Hashanah specifically, right? For the regalim, it's harder to say like that because the nature is different, and also the connection to the karbanos, which complicates things, which is not a factor for Rosh Hashanah. But we can focus on Rosh Hashanah here, because that's what's coming up. So, but that whole idea that there is a kiyum shebelev, so most of the mitzvah of the Torah said 98% of the mitzvahs of the Torah, the kiyum and the maisa are together. But we just happen to be lucky right now that in Elul Tishrei, so we have a whole cluster of exceptions. So it could be shofar is an exception, and it could be that Simchas Yontif, and especially Simchas Rosh Hashanah, might be of a different form. But also, it could be that tshuva is of a different form. So when it comes to tshuva, so the whole kiyum is presumably belayv, right? What is the mitzvah of tshuva? The mitzvah of tshuva is that we should take on a whole different kind of attitude. We should take on a different mindset. We should change internally. And therefore, that's where the real action happens. The real kiyum is belayv. So if there's a mitzvah, so what does that mitzvah relate to? So then we'd have to say that vidui is the vehicle. That vidui is essentially the maisa hamitzvah. This is what we do in order to prompt ourselves to really get to that mindset that actually is tshuva. So by recounting all of our mistakes, by going through everything that we regret, so that prompts a new state of mind. And through that state of mind, so then one comes to actually do tshuva. So the Rambam focuses on the Maisa. What's the Maisa? The Maisa is vidui. But certainly he acknowledges that the goal of that is tshuva. This is the vehicle to tshuva. And therefore, through that, we can reach the actual mitzvah of tshuva itself.
Is there an afkamina in doing the mitzvah as tshuva, doing it as vidui, meaning they have the same end goal in mind,
yeah,
as what you're focusing on, I guess?
Yeah, I think the afkamina is not so much about the vidui, although a little bit, because if one does vidui in a completely dispassionate way, so then that probably wouldn't be vidui. But I think the nafkamina also is not so much about the vidui, but about the tshuva, about the implication that Rambam doesn't think tshuva is a mitzvah, so that seems very hard to say. So what Rav Soloveitchik is explaining is that, no, tshuva sure is a mitzvah, but how do you do that mitzvah? You do that mitzvah through a demonstrable act, an identifiable act, and that's the act of vidui.
But Rambam would say you don't need that act of vidui?
No, he would say that also, but he doesn't. You know, the question doesn't come out through him because he's going to say that it's the mitzvah of tshuva anyway. You did your in then, Eric?
So when's the kiyum of the mitzvah tshuva?
Oh, so that's a big question. So that's something I want to come back to in a second, because there's a lot of room to wonder about that. Right, Childu tshuva to the tshuva. We'll come back to it.
It's probably like it's primarily related. Does anyone consider tshuva a lotase?
Well, not a lotase, but we mentioned before that those think that it only comes about because of lotase, and that should...
Yeah. I guess also is to like, you know, tshuva, like, you know, I guess...
Yeah, so the tshuva part is the assay. So it comes, maybe comes about because of the violation of a losa assay. But this understanding of vidui, just to go back to last week's parsha, I think it's also relevant to understanding last week's parsha, not so much the psukim, but the way Chazal depicted. Because in Parsha's Kisavo, in the second Aliyah, So there's a nusach there that Chazal call vidui meiser, the vidui that accompanies meiser. And if you look at the psukim and chumash, they don't sound too confessional. The language is lo avarti mitzvosecha, velo shachachti, asisi, kechal asher tzvisani. Basically saying, I'm perfect. So I did everything you asked, I didn't forget anything, I followed all the commandments. So why is that called a vidui? So I thought the pshat was also along the lines of what Rasal Bichik is saying here. The definition of vidui does not just mean saying you're terrible. The definition of vidui is, it is a verbal expression that is meant to provoke tshuva. So what does that? So most commonly, what does that is when you go through all your mistakes, when you remember everything you did wrong, so you feel bad about that, and that pushes you to do tshuva. But self-satisfaction is not the only Yetzirah, the idea that you think you're perfect, and when you remember that you're not, so that corrects that Yetzirah. It's not the only Yetzirah, it's maybe the more common one. But there's also a very significant Yetzirah that comes from the opposite attitude. The attitude that somebody says, yeah, I know I've sinned, and I'm just not capable of anything better. I'm just hopeless, and there's nothing I can do. And that's the big problem. That often is an impediment to tshuva. So you might do tshuva because you might not do tshuva because you think you're perfect. You might not do tshuva because you think you're the opposite of perfect. You think you're hopeless. So to that, we also need a corrective. So to remember that sometimes you do get things right. Sometimes you're able to say, "Asisi kechal asher tzivisani, lo'avarti mitzvosecha, v'lo shachachti." I got all this right, and I'm capable of doing that more often. I'm capable of rising above this, and that's also a verbal expression that could provoke tshuva, that could provoke growth, and therefore the language of vidui is perhaps appropriate for that also. So that's another way to approach this whole language of the Rambam, and to understand that he's not saying that tshuva is not a mitzvah, but to say that there's a process, and the process is in the vidui. Rav Shem Shnofal Hirsch, actually here in the Tzavim, so he notes that the focus on the bracha and the klala that introduces this whole topic says that the idea of v'shav, that you're going to return, is connected to the idea that you're going to do internal reflection. You're going to introspect, that you're going to think about, look at everything I've been through, all my ups and downs, my brachos and my klalos, and what has that done to me, and what part have I played, and all the whole story. So that will make you introspect, and that will also push you towards this tshuva that is the real kiyum. The sefer came out a few years ago called the Avir Yaakov, where he also notes about this language of bracha and klala. He says, okay, klala, I can see it. Klala, you have bad experiences, so that could push you to do tshuva. But how does bracha push you to do tshuva? So there probably are a few ways it could push you to do tshuva. It could be in the more positive sense that it inspires you to recognize what you're capable of and to recognize what you have to live up to, in the sense of what Yaakov Avinu said. My daughter actually had a homework assignment about this pasuk last night, so it's also a synergy. Katonti mikol hachasad mikol ha'emes, right? That if you feel that you are less than what you have been given, so then bracha can push you to live up to it, can push you to do tshuva. And the Avir Yaakov, he points to the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, which says that we should be like the Talmidim of Aaron HaKohen, and that his impact on people. So the Rambam in the Perush Mishnayos says that the idea of Aaron's influence on people is that when he saw people who needed to do better, he would become friendly with them, and then they would feel, if Aaron's friendly with me, I have to live up to that standard, I have to rise up to that level. So here it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu essentially doing that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying that he's going to be friendly with you, and then you're going to feel, how could I not be living up to the standard? How could I not rise to the level of what is considered to be the proper behavior that HaKadosh Baruch Hu requests of me? So that's another possible interpretation. So what about the whole question of these psukim and the Rambam? So if you were to take the position that the Rambam doesn't think there's a mitzvah tshuva, which we've concluded is unlikely, but we've noted that one question is also just the psukim, what are the psukim talking about? But the truth is, even within everything we've said so far, so at some point out, it seems like the Rambam certainly does believe in a mitzvah of tshuva, but probably not from these psukim. He doesn't seem to be understanding the psukim as telling us that. So the other possibility, as the Sfarim point out, is that this could all be a lashon of Havtacha, that this is telling us that there is a promise here that we will ultimately do tshuva, and that one way or another that's guaranteed, and that that is going to be connected to our return, so that our geula is going to be inextricably linked to our spiritual redemption, and the physical redemption of being brought back is going to be connected to that, and the association is highlighted in these aliyahs. So even if this is not the context of the imperative, it is making the linkage clear and telling us, therefore, that there is a promise. In the Tshuvas Beis Yitzchak, of Rav Yitzchak Shmalkus in Yerodei and Kufsam Mechetz, he has a tshuva where he is also kind of synergizes with something we spoke about in Gittin. He talks about, why is there no bracha on the mitzvah of tshuva? So if there is a mitzvah of tshuva, why is there no bracha? So he suggests, along the lines of what was suggested earlier about the whole counting of the mitzvah, that since the kiyum comes through an aveira, so maybe it's not appropriate to have a bracha on such a mitzvah, which again has some synergy to the whole get in question. But the truth is, you probably could say even more fundamental answers to this question. And you may recall that we mentioned also in the context of Gittin that, though we referred to the Tshuva of the Rashba there, that there's certain go-to makoros that are always brought up when the question comes up of any given mitzvah, why is there no bracha? So the klalim for when there is a bracha and when there isn't a bracha, so there's certain standard makoros that are always relevant. So one is the Beis Yosef. Beis Yosef in Hilchos Pesach, where he talks about B'dikas Chametz and the fact that we make the bracha on beer and not on bitl, not on beer, but on biur. They're both related to Chametz, but we make the bracha on biur Chametz and not on bitl Chametz. So the Beis Yosef explains that bittul is belayv, the real kiyum of bittul happens internally, it's a mental process, so you decide to negate the chametz as far as your relationship to it. So we don't make a bracha on something that's belayv. So the Sefer Hadrash V'Ha'iyun, that was written by the Reish Rav, by Rabbi Aaron Levine, who was the grandfather of Rabbi Aaron Levine, who was a professor here. So he suggests that maybe along those lines, no bracha on tshuva, because tshuva can be done belev also, so therefore if there's no bracha on mitzvah shebelev, so then there's no bracha on tshuva either. So I would take it a little further and say it's not just that the mitzvah could be done belev, but that's the whole mitzvah. The mitzvah is always belev, because even though we're pointing to other things here that are vehicles towards tshuva, but the kiyum is really belev. So if the kiyum is belev, so then perhaps that is something which itself should explain why there's no bracha. And what's the question about
is
that?
It's not like Kabbalah, it's not like it's verbally stated?
So even if that's the tool, but the kiyum, the real fulfillment, is when it comes to bittul also, we say it out loud, right? But the kiyum of the bittul is a mindset. So here it's not just that it's possible, but it's really always the case that the real mitzvah of tshuva, whatever it is we're doing externally, but the mitzvah of tshuva is really about what happens belayv, so that should explain if it's ready. You could also, while taking this path of talking about the go-to sources, so we mentioned in the Gittin Shir talking about the tshuva sarashba. So the Rashba, among other things, he says you don't make a bracha on a mitzvah that's contingent on somebody else. It sounds like that's what he means. That he talks about staka there, and sounds like he's saying that if you don't know whether your staka will be accepted, so then you can't make the bracha because maybe it'll leave you hanging. So one could certainly say that when it comes to tshuva also, that tshuva is a process that needs to be brought to a certain level of completion and presumably acceptance, which is also what these psukim are indicating. We're returning to Hashem. And therefore, when the mitzvah is fulfilled is going to be a little bit mysterious, which relates to the question that was brought before. Caleb?
Well, so there's the part of, isn't the last part of teshuva when we're put in the same situation and then we don't make the choice that we made when we...
The Rambam mentions that, the Chazal mentioned that, but the question whether that's the process or whether that is the proof. So it's hard to point to that, and it's hard also to know how much weight that plays. And also, what about the majority of cases, or at least enough of the cases, where that opportunity never comes? Does that mean the individual has never done tshuva? So we don't necessarily...
No, but doesn't that mean that we're able to make, at that point, which doing that action further solidifies that we have done... It's both a proof that we've done true tshuva, and it's something that also psychologically makes us... solidifies that tshuva and says that, yeah, we really meant what we said and the kiyum that we accepted. So how come after we do said action, we don't make a bracha?
Because even if you were to say, which I think is a little bit of a jump for a number of reasons, if you said, okay, at that point, you know, you're done, so we have to make brachas over le'asiyos, and we have to make brachas before, right? So otherwise, that would help a lot of situations if we had the option.
We don't do that with Shabbat.
Which bracha do we make on Shabbos?
Near Shal Shabbat.
So nearest Shabbos to the question where exactly is the focus of the mitzvah. That's why they get the hanah from the light afterwards, because mm-hmm. that's the kiyum ha-mitzvah. But in general, the Gemara says, as a klal, we have to make brachos over le'asiyasan, and if we could always have the option of making it afterwards. There are a number of exceptions for technicalities, but otherwise there would be a lot more situations in which we could make brachos. But I think there are other questions here also, and I don't know how much that is the be-all and end-all, being in the same situation again. Rav Kook, whose writings on tshuva were very widely impactful, say for Ala Tshuva, Oros HaTshuva, Ala Tshuva is Rav Soloveitchik's shiur, say for Oros HaTshuva. So in the beginning of the Oros HaTshuva, so Rav Kook makes the point, which I think very much resonates with us at this time of year, that tshuva, our goal for especially these next 2 weeks, is both the easiest and the hardest mitzvah, he wrote. So why is it the easiest mitzvah? It's the easiest mitzvah because, as the Gemara indicates, that you can be mekayim et behirur, that even a thought could fulfill the mitzvah of tshuva. It doesn't require you going anywhere, it doesn't require you spending any money, let's say, it doesn't require too much other things. It just could be that even a hirur could be a fulfillment of the mitzvah. So on the one hand, that seems to be among the easiest mitzvahs that you'll find. But it's at the same time, it's the hardest of the mitzvahs. Now, it's the hardest mitzvahs for a lot of reasons, because anything that involves change is, of course, much, much more difficult than a lot of other things. And Rabbi Saul Salanter famously said that it's easier to learn all of Shas than it is to change one midah. So we don't need so much explanation why tshuva is hard. But there he focuses on one specific aspect of it, which kind of is the counterbalance to the idea of the hirur tshuva as a simple process. Because when do we ever know that we have fulfilled the mitzvah of tshuva? And I think, to give an example, that if after Sukkot, you guys come back, and I say to you, so, how was the yontif? Did you take a lulav? Did you sit in the sukkah? Did you fast on Yom Kippur? Did you hear the shofar? You'll presumably be able to answer, hopefully, that, yeah, you did all those things. You'll be able to report back. But if I said to you, so, did you do tshuva? So you'll see how the year turns out, right?
Right.
But if from the process perspective, I would ask you, did you do tshuva? So I think we'll probably say, I hope, I tried, I think, I did what I could. The idea, the satisfaction that comes from, okay, I took the lulav, I heard the shofar, I made it through Yom Kippur fasting. There we can point to what we did and know that it was done. When it comes to the mitzvah of tshuva, to know that it was actually fulfilled is very, very hard, if impossible, to point to. So that certainly also should fit the rules for a no bracha mitzvah. But also, I would say there's another related point, and that you don't even have to look to the Rishonim, but the Gemara says in Menachos that you don't have a bracha for a mitzvah that is not completed at that point. If a mitzvah is completed later, so then, you know, the Gemara Siyosu is later, so then you don't have a bracha. So there, you could say, all the more so, that tshuva certainly fits into that category. But not only because of what we just said, that it's hard to identify if you were successful or not, or to see when it clicks, so to speak. But more fundamentally, to go back to our original point, that tshuva is by its very nature never done. As long as we're still alive, there's always more tshuva to do. And it's not a discrete action that I can say, okay, so today I put on tefillin, so I know I put on tefillin this morning. I'll do it again tomorrow, but I know that today I did my mitzvah. Tshuva is a lifetime process, and there's always more to do. So how would you ever define it as saying, okay, now I'm done? And Caleb actually goes more to your point in the other direction, you know, the idea that there's something still to wait for to prove. So, you know, to say that, okay, I have to see if the situation comes up again and if I withstand the temptation. If anything, that kind of highlights this reason not to consider the mitzvah done, because it means that you need to wait for the verification later, and then what happens if there's two more opportunities? You know, there's always going to be another potential verification and challenge about which there's a lot to say, not necessarily for now. And happens to be that I think that that Rambam has to be understood a little differently, that not that the tshuva is actually taking place then. But in any event, so to ever know that the tshuva is finished, or to ever think there's even a possibility the tshuva is finished, that's something that is inherently contradictory, perhaps, to the whole nature of the mitzvah, and therefore to say that there shouldn't be a bracha for that reason, that's itself enough of an explanation. The whole language here of Ad Hashem Elokecha, so Rav Kook and other writings, also highlights that there's a couple of languages of Shav here, of Shav and Tshuva, that adds up to really three times that we talk about Tshuva, and he suggests it's because there are different levels of Tshuva that are being referenced. And we know that the Gemara in Yuma talks about Tshuva Meira, a Tshuva that is motivated by fear of consequences, for lack of a better explanation, a tshuva me'ava, a higher level of more all-encompassing tshuva that comes from love. And there's also a Kadosh Baruch Hu's acceptance of the tshuva. He says these are all being referenced here. So here, the first reference of ad is to say that that's the lowest level, basically ad v'lo ad b'chlal, that it's up to God but not yet totally embracing Him, that it's coming, you're running away from all the other things that will get you in trouble, and you're afraid of consequences. But it means that there's still more to come, and he would expound upon this in the whole process of Geula, especially in the context of these psukim, that our spiritual return is linked to our physical return. So that spiritual return is going to have to be complete, is going to have to not just be running away from punishment, but it's going to have to be a positive embrace. But that is what these psukim are promising us, that ultimately that will happen. I was thinking also it might be possible to suggest, we talk about the gullus. So the gullus, on the one hand, is a harsh punishment, and that's the kind of thing that would seem to provoke tshuva meira, that, okay, we're looking at being thrown out, we're experiencing being exiled. So all of that's very negative, and you want to prevent or reverse that consequence, so that could motivate tshuva meira. But we know from so many Musar Shmuzin that we've heard in our lives, here in America and elsewhere, that it's possible to get used to the galus, and that's why we spend so much time on Tisha B'Av trying to reorient our thinking, and 3 weeks trying to get ourselves in a mentality that is somewhat foreign to us, because we get comfortable in the galus and we don't really recognize that it's bad. So I wonder if you could suggest that's a part of the process, that if we only felt the badness, so then the only tshuva that would be possible would be tshuva meira, stop hitting me, stop punishing me. But if we're able to get used to it and feel comfortable, so that opens the door for tshuva me'ava, that then we can say, okay, yes, we are happy here, but we recognize that there's much more to aspire to, there's much more to look for, and that we embrace the process of spiritual tshuva linked to the physical return. So that's maybe giving us the fact that we can get used to the galus, gives us the opportunity to embrace the tshuva me'ava, and that's what's being described in this psukim, maybe possible to suggest along those lines. So just to say a few more words about the language in these remaining psukim. So first of all, we find the intergenerational references here. So in Pasuk Beis, it says, Atu v'necha, so you and your children. So the Znaim Matarav Lutzkarav comments over here that that's a reference to the maybe more often quoted idea of the Heshuv Levavos Labanav Lebanam Alavosam, that we know there's all kinds of generational impact that goes in both directions. Sometimes the parents influence the children, sometimes the children influence the parents. We've all seen examples of both. And that the Pasuk is saying, whichever way it happens, that this is ultimately a promise and it's going to be brought about through the way people influence each other. And in families, that can happen in all kinds of directions, and that's itself very significant. The pasuk, the fourth pasuk here, pasuk Dalet, we know is very often quoted. Is quoted in our tefillos. We say, "Miyari dachacha b'sei hashamayim, misham yikabetzcha shem elokecha, misham yikachecha." that wherever you are scattered to, so God will gather you from there and he will bring everybody back. So it's a little bit of surprising language because you could get scattered over the four corners of the world. But what's Pshat B'Kseh HaShamayim? The edge of the sky. So the truth is, okay, now we have space exploration, so who knows, that could be more relevant. But the Baba Rosh Yeshiva of Steinwurzel suggested that what the reference here is that it's referring to Shemayim Dika things, referring to holy things, that sometimes the problem is that the reason people need to do tshuva is for spiritual attitudes that are misplaced, that they think they're doing the right thing, they think they're doing a mitzvah, but it's a bad cheshbon. They're putting the secondary thing first, they're emphasizing the less significant at the expense of the more significant, and therefore they're not doing the right thing, but it's coming from a spiritual place. It's coming from what they believe is a mitzvah. So that's very difficult because those people, all of us do this, I'm saying, but those averos are harder to have tshuva take place because when somebody looks at what he's doing wrong, he's not so likely to see this on the list, not so likely to find this as the reason to change, the reason to do tshuva. And so the promise is, even from there, even Mikseh HaShamayim, even those who are the other edges of heaven, or the other edges of Shamayim, because they're pursuing things that are spiritual and uplifting, but they're still taking them astray. They're still not allowing them to realize who they should be. So Kadosh Baruch Hu was saying, I will take you back from there as well. And here also, the Pesukim continue, V'aviyacha shem lokech al aretz asher yirshu l'osecha, v'yishta v'yitivacha v'hirbacha me'avosecha, umal hashem lokech es lebavcha v'yes lebav zaracha li'ahava es hashem lokech b'chal lebavcha b'chal nafshecha v'man chayecha. So here again, you also have an intergenerational reference. V'es eslevavcha, v'es levav zaracha. So your hearts, and also the hearts of your children. So here also, some point out that that's something that Rav Kook spoke about also, that this is reflective of the fact that whoever will be the drive to, whichever group of people will be the drive for tshuva at that time when history is ultimately redeemed, will know how to speak the language of the different generations. And certainly that's something that we know today, that one generation doesn't necessarily speak the language of the other generation. And bringing about that process of tshuva is going to require being able to communicate to people of all different languages and all different attitudes. And that's also a part of the Havtacha here. But this last pasuk also begins with a phrase that's also very familiar and is particularly relevant to us also, because one of the many ramazim that we have for Elul, we know that Elul, there is a notion, I guess, of looking for inspiration in ramazim. We spoke a few weeks ago about what's a siman and what's nechush. So this is a time of year where we look for inspirational thoughts, and part of that is Elul is understood to stand for a number of things, and Ela Dodi V'Dodi Li. So one of them is from this pasuk, Es Levavcha V'Es Levav. Right, so Aleph Lamed Vav Lamed Es Levavcha V'Es Levav spells out Elul. But what's the context? So this is a context of Shuvo Mal Hashem Elokecha. So, literally, what does mal mean? So, we know that we use that for circumcision. So, that's the most common usage. But the general concept of orla and mila is about taking away something which is obstructing, something which is in the way and needs to be removed. So that's the general imagery of orla, is that which is in the way. Mila is to remove it. So, here, the pasuk, a very important end to this whole theme. So the Aliyah, in this brief six psukim, but from beginning to end, the Aliyah is telling us that there's this commandment, presumably, of tshuva, and a promise that tshuva will happen, and a process that links us to a redemptive endeavor through tshuva. So we also know that it's difficult, that there are things in the way, that there are attitudes, and that there are habits, and there are aspects of the environment that get in the way, and it makes it very difficult. So God is saying, I will take care of that also. That the promise is that ultimately those are going to be removed. And this language in the Torah elsewhere, earlier in Sefer Dvarim, is invoked as a reference to Gaiva. that we are told that we have to get rid of the arla of our hearts, which means perhaps to get rid of our haughtiness, to get rid of that which tells us that we are perfect and that we don't need any instruction from anyone, we don't need any improvement. So that's also consistent with the notion of vidui, the notion of pointing out that we do have what to learn from. And together with that, also, there's another theme here. So, Rav Teichtal, in his sefer, the sefer of his ideas called the Mishnah Sacher al HaTorah, printed a few years ago, a collection of some of his thoughts al HaTorah. He's the author of the Eim HaBanim Smecha. So he's very focused, ultimately, on issues of Geula and redemption. And he brings a number of sources in talking about this, which are less familiar, but they parallel a more familiar idea, which is not a part of his tradition. But we're more familiar with this notion from Rav Dessler. He's quoting from other sources which support the same idea. But Rav Dessler is often quoted as having popularized the idea of the Nekudas HaBechira, that even though we believe that we have Bechira Chavshis, we believe that we have free will, and it's up to us to decide what to do. But says it's not true that at any minute of any day, at any point in our lives, we have all the options open in front of us. Our decisions very often close off certain options. So wherever we are found at a certain moment is the result of a lifetime of decisions and attitudes, and therefore there's only a range of possibilities that remain in front of us, even though we theoretically have the ability to choose forever everything. So he calls that the Nekudas HaBechira. So Rav Teichtal quotes sources that make a similar point from different directions. It's actually very interesting to compare them. But he says what's happening here is that there are people who kemat don't have Bechira, that even though it's axiomatic that everyone has Bechira, but you can entrench within yourself certain attitudes and certain habits and certain ways of seeing things that it makes it almost impossible for you to do anything differently, that you are so embedded in a certain position that in a certain way of how you see yourself and how you see the world, that it's kemat as if you don't have Bechira. It's kemat as if you're not able to do anything different. So here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to take care of that too. I'm going to remove whatever it is. That's the Orlas Halev. That is the impediment that gets in the way of your heart. That you're not able to give your heart to God because it's committed to something else that you are habitually devoted to. And God says, I'm going to cut that away. I'll take away what's in the way so that you will have access to your heart, and then you can give your heart over to God. You can actually follow through with this process of tshuva in a full sense. So this is a very important point, and the whole Aliyah, again, could not be more appropriate for our last shiur before Rosh Hashanah, before the start of the Aseret Yimei Tshuva. So to be able to focus on all of these themes of what it is that is contained within the imperative of tshuva, the process of tshuva, the obstacles to tshuva, all of this is alluded to in this brief Aliyah, and I hope we've been able to see a little bit how that emerges. And hopefully we can take that and internalize it, and that's the whole mitzvah here, what is internalized, what happens on the inside. And through that, we should be able to have a simcha on Rosh Hashanah that comes from an optimism in recognizing that this process should be successful for us, and Be'ez Hashem should take us to a very successful and harmonious next year. Okay, so here's the story. So we have, I guess we'll have to dive in.